Bom, já sei.
Okay. Well, if it's all right, could you tell me a little bit about how you came to Harford County?
By accident. Accident. I picked up a Christian Standard and read an article by Bernard Gibbons. The church at Bel-Air was without a minister. And I had 3 years of history, reading history at Vanderbilt. There was a man over here at Hopkins, history teacher, in what is known as recent American history since 1846. And I wanted to study under him. I told Mr. Walker an opportunity to go to Hopkins. So I called Mr. Gibbons over the telephone and he said yes. And the church was looking for a minister. And I looked up the church in the yearbook and it was a small country church with a small membership. Pastoral Unity with Fort Christian Church. But it was an opportunity to go to Johns Hopkins. So I made contact and came down and they extended me a call. And I came from Central Christian Church, Kalamazoo, Michigan, to the Mountain Christian Church. Spent about 2 years in Hopkins, and I've been here 34 years.
Never did make it to Hopkins.
I haven't gotten to Hopkins yet. That's how I got to Bel-Air. But we have no reason to regret the decision that we made to come here. I had a man out at Hopkins that I wanted to read history under, that I'd had some of the finest recent American history teachers at Vanderbilt possible. But to change environment and change the universities, I thought would be helpful to me. And I had already spent 4 years in the old Nashville Bible School. And then I went to Milligan College and spent 4 years there. And then I went out to Vanderbilt and spent 3 years there. Mostly history, English, and psychology, field in which I worked. Studied psychology because I wanted to know how to get along with people. I studied history to find out what was in the past. And then the theology business, I wanted to know a little how the people were thinking in the East. Where Alexander Campbell labored for a great many years. Now you ask a question and I'll try to answer them.
What year did you come? You came here, what,
46.
47? 46.
And this is
And
80.
it's a long time.
That's a long 2 years, isn't
It is. And the little church down here by the edge of the road, what was the approximate, the congregation, how large was it then?
Oh, I should say 250, maybe more. Yes, and little frame building. And then we had Fork. And Fork. Went over to the Fork Church in the morning early, 8:30, and came back for the 11 o'clock service here.
Was that a branch of the little church that was, I think it's on the Magnus property now, that little meeting house? Did this church break away from that group?
No. And the little meeting house over on the Magnus property used to be out here in Roma. That was the original building, I think, in which the church worshiped over here in Roma.
That was the Christian church? Or
Well,
was it a combination of the Christians
it
and the
was a
Methodists?
union house of worship. There were several religious bodies in there. And some moved out and went to Folsom. Some moved out. I went over across the gunpowder. We at one time worshipped across the gunpowder for a while. It's called Jericho up on the hill there. And then this property, 4 acres, was made possible by the McComas family. They were in business in Baltimore. We had 4 acres there, consisting of the mostly cemetery, where the cemetery is now, mm-hmm. and going on out toward Jerusalem Road. And then we've added quite a few acres since then. Just recently we bought, I believe, 10 more acres down below the church. We had several acres in there. But what we have in mind is an educational building down there, and also a rest home, a home for the elderly people. I don't know which one will come first, the home for the elderly people or the educational building. We, at the present time, need more work for the day school. I think we have a waiting list now to get in. And we have about 140 enrolled, someone told me 3 days ago.
What year did the building start on the new church?
Well, the contract was let in 54. 1954. It took 2 years to complete it. That's a sanctuary. Mm-hmm. It was dedicated in 56.
Some people were doubtful whether you could
They said it would never be built. See, the contract on that price then was $252,000. Just the building, just a sanctuary for it, not the educational unit you have today. They didn't see how a country church would ever put up a building like that. And even our board of church extension in Indianapolis, Mrs. Walker and I went up there and had an interview with a man and did the lending the money, Wicks and Wickhauser. Wicks was the architect, and Wickhauser had charge of making the loans. And Mr. Wicks said he'd rather not have anything to do with the building because you've been working with downtown central churches and you can't go out in the country and build a church like that. You're working with a bunch of farmers. And just put you up a nice little brick building and forget the other. I said, well, Mr. Wicks, Mr. Wickhauser, I didn't come up here for your information. I came up here to borrow some money, and if you don't let me have it, say so. He said, well, you're not going to get that kind of money. I said, well, don't you worry about that. So I came back and talked it over with John Pitcock, Albert Magnus, and Charles Richardson, 3 or 4 other men. And they said, well, suppose we go down to the bank. And Judge Preston was sitting there in the bank. And he said, Brother Walker, how long are you going to stay with that church? Long enough to get the building up and the big debt and you run off and leave them. I said, no. I think I made my last run. I've only had 4 churches in all of my life. That would include this one. He said, well, if you're going to stay there, we'll let you have the money. You'll have to get a bank in Baltimore to come in with us, and we'll make arrangements for the loan. So we borrowed the money through the bank, local bank, with some bank in Baltimore. We borrowed the money for 7 years, and we never missed a note on the first Sunday of each month.
How was it paid for?
Well, it was paid for by what we call the prayer boxes, the boxes that were put into the homes, and they were to give a nickel, a dime, a dollar, bills during the month, and the ladies would go and collect those prayer boxes a week before the first Sunday, and in the afternoon of the first Sunday they met and counted the money. And they usually had a sufficient amount of money to meet that payment. And if they didn't, we had three or four men who said nothing, and they would make up the difference. If it was $100, they would put it in. If it was $300 or $400, they would put it in. We never missed one. But that building today, you put that building up today, it cost you $1 million. A little better the way it's built.
What? Why did you decide to build such a beautiful building?
Because I wanted to build a congregation, and you have to have buildings. I could have put up a little brick building like some of them wanted. But I wanted to put up the best building in Harford County. And that's what we did. We put up one of the best in the state of Tennessee, in Maryland, in Tennessee too, as far as I know. And it was paid for within 7 years. We never missed a note. Now the educational building has been added on. And that costs, $500,000.
Well, now, what was the church congregation like when you came to Harford County?
Well, I was working with the Fort Christian Church, or with Fort, a small congregation in a frame building. And I was working with the Mountain Christian Church. It had 250 or 300 members, maybe, on the rolls, meeting in a little frame building up here. The little sanctuary seated 146 people, I believe. And the Sunday school rooms were in the back and downstairs in the dining room and kitchen. We used every available space we could get.
What were the people like? Were they mostly farmers or?
No, we had less than a half a dozen farmers in the church. They are not farmers. We had, I guess, 5 or 6 farmers. That is, people who earned a livelihood by farming. Several of them owned farms, but they didn't farm. And they were businessmen in Bel Air, Abergrass, Baltimore. The membership was scattered. They still come here from Towson and Abergrass, even though we have a church now in Abergrass. And they still come here to worship.
Weren't you one of the first churches to start the Bible school?
You mean the day school?
No, the youngsters in the summertime.
Summer conferences?
And daily vacation Bibles.
Yes, yes. Mrs. Walker was the first one that started that. They had a union daily vacation Bible school down on Philadelphia Road with some other churches. But she was the one that got the daily vacation Bible school in the Mountain Church. Yeah. And I don't think we've missed a summer since then. And then we were dreaming about the day school. It took some time to get that. Many thought that would be an impossibility to have a day school. But we do. I think we're going through the 8th grade now. 7th to 8th grade. We have 10 teachers, somebody told me. Now, we've been doing the impossible. I didn't know anything about a country church. I was born and reared in Nashville. And I came here from downtown Central Church, Kalamazoo, Michigan. I came here to go to Hopkins. I knew nothing about a country church. And Mrs. Walker didn't want to come. When she came down and saw that little white building, she asked me if I'd gone completely out of my mind to leave a church like Central Church, Kalamazoo, college town, university town, with a downtown church, and come out here in the country. Said, now you don't know country people. Said, I was born and raised in the country, and you're not going to do anything with that bunch of farmers. But we didn't have very many farmers in the church.
Was it very rural around here when you first came?
It was rural, yeah. But we have seen city streets that threw a lot of these farms out in this area. And the growth is still in the future. Bel Air has grown. The area has grown. Baltimore has been pushing out into Harford County, using Harford County as a bedroom, you know. It can go any other direction other than west. It's got to go west or come this direction.
Approximately how many Timothys have you sent from this church?
Oh, you know, six, seven. Just how I remember. Yeah, well, this is one of my Timothys, one of my Timothys. I baptized him and sent him down to Milligan for 4 years, and Emmanuel 3 years. And then we brought him back here to succeed me. He was a painter. I took him off of a ladder. He'd been with the Merchant Marine, I think about 10 years. He was working with his brother, and I got a hold of him. He sat out there in front of that little chapel building, you know, where the studio is now. We talked about the ministry. He was interested in it. And he just about decided to go into the ministry. He was married and had a child, Gail. I said, Bill, I'll never ordain you unless you go to school. You have 4 years in Milligan College and you have 3 years in Emmanuel. If you're willing to pay the price, I'll get in touch with Dr. Webb and find you a church assistant minister. And you can go down there and spend 7 years. And then you'll be prepared for the ministry. And we'll ordain you. So he counted the cost, and after he'd been with Merchant Marine and making good money, he went down to Milligan College, then switched over to Emmanuel, spent 7 years down there. And he worked with Dr. Webb, and he had a very strong teacher and a very strong preacher. And Dr. Webb, and that was an asset to Bill.
And you have two missionaries?
Well, missionaries.
Kenny and
Glenn. We have several Timothys. Donald Tharp is one.
Bob Crow.
Robert Crow is one. Lee Magnus is another one. Dr. Kenny Messman. He wanted to be a medical missionary. And he tried several medical schools and couldn't get in. I said, well, I'm a graduate of Vanderbilt and I'm pretty well acquainted with Nashville. I was born and reared there. And the dean of the medical school graduated in the School of Medicine the same year I graduated the school of history. And I know him, and we'll go down and see what we can do. So we went down and had a talk with the dean. And he said, Brother Walker, is he telling you the truth? Does he want to come here to become a doctor, go to a mission field? I said, yes, I know the boy, I baptized him, and I ordained him to the ministry, and he wouldn't tell me a lie. I'm sure he wouldn't. And I said, if he doesn't go, should he be fortunate enough to get in the School of Medicine at Vanderbilt and then didn't go to a mission field, I'd make it rough for him as long as he lived. I would haunt him. And so he did. They took him in. And they were 400 ahead of him, waiting to get in Vanderbilt School of Medicine. And they let him in. And he graduated, and that's where he went. He's down there in Rhodesia now. He's in Rhodesia, somewhere down there. Working with black people. And someone told me that he was offered $40,000 a year to go on a hospital stay when he went down there. How true that is, I don't know. But I know one thing, they pay large salaries to get good men in hospitals, and this was a hospital in Indianapolis. In Oregon. Now, we've sent several of our men into the ministry. A number have gone into the teaching profession, and some have gone into business. And there's Henry Richardson in full business, and Cresswell in the oil business. We have quite a few businessmen, as well as teachers and preachers. Sometimes we leave out the businessmen and we just think about the preachers and the teachers.
How did you decide to be in the ministry?
Well, I think that was decided for me before I was born. My grandfather was a minister, Barton. He was a Baptist minister, missionary Baptist church. And my father and wanted me to be a minister. My mother wanted me to be a doctor. And the Barton family said they would pay my way through Vanderbilt School of Medicine if I would become a doctor, a physician. And I told them I didn't want to be a doctor, a physician. I wanted to be a minister. And they said, we won't pay your way then. And so, I didn't get any money from them, but I did get a scholarship that took care of all of my expenses when I was at Vanderbilt.
Did you work during the summer?
Hmm?
Did you work during the summer? No, selling Bibles or something?
No, I did that when I was a boy.
Oh.
Yeah, when I was a boy, in high school age, I sold Bibles. I went to West Virginia one summer to sell Bibles. And I decided I could sell as many Bibles in Nashville as I could West Virginia, and I didn't see any reason why going to West Virginia and walk all over those hills. I went up there and I got on the train and came back. I was working with the Southwestern Company, and they said, what are you doing back? I said, I'm not working up there. Well, where do you want to work? I said, Nashville. But you can't sell any Bibles in Nashville. It's worked to death. I thought, I want to sell Bibles. I want to sell this storybook. And Charlotte's storybook, that's the only one I want to use. And you're getting $1.50 for it now, and I'm going to put the price up to $2.50. He said, well, you can't do that. I said, well, I won't sell them then. He said, well, we'll let you sell them at $2.50. I said, if I come to somebody that I want to give one or two away, I'll give them away. And I did. But I made enough money there to get me through the school, help me through school.
Did you work at a bakery?
I did that when I was a boy. I had to pay my way through school. And David Lipscomb was about 5 miles from Nashville. And my father was not able to send me to David Lipscomb. So I went down to the Nashville Baking Company. It was owned by H.C. Hill, and my father knew Hill. They started in business together. My father was in grocery business, and Hill started in grocery business. But he was cash and carry, no telephone. My father had the delivery service and telephone and credit. And H.G. Hill finally ended up with about 175 or 200 stores. And my father ended up with one, with thousands of dollars owed to him by customers that refused to pay him. He would never sue anybody. He'd rather lose the money than sue somebody. And I don't know that my father ever sued a customer for what was owed him. But the people that owed him money, when they got cash, instead of coming to my father and trying to pay their bills, they'd go down to H.D. Hill cash and carry and buy there. But when they didn't have the money, they would come up to buy from my father. I learned a lot about business and human nature from him and his dealing with the public. And then when I got into the ministry, I learned more. But I've been in the ministry a long time. I began about 1912. I was 16 or 17 years of age when I began preaching. And I did my first revival meeting in 1915. They sent me down to Columbia, Tennessee to do a series of meetings. And I'd never conducted a revival meeting. I was still wearing the knee trousers, the bloomers. They told me I'd better put on long trousers to go down there to do a meeting. They wouldn't let me hold it. So I did. I had to buy some long trousers, some white shirts and black ties. But when I got out there, they looked at me. They wouldn't announce the services for the week. They said they would have to decide at the evening service whether they would have a meeting or not. They said, we didn't know Brother Walker was going to be so young. So after I preached the morning service and the evening service, they spent 4 or 5 minutes over in the corner and they decided to let me go ahead. And later I went back for 2 or 3 meetings for that church. And then a little later I took the church in Columbia, Tennessee.
You had that for 2 pastors, didn't you?
Yeah, 2, and was called back for the 3rd one, and I came here instead of going there. Yeah.
Did you ever run out of material to have sermons on, or how did you determine?
No, I had some fine teachers at David Lipscomb. I took lectures under David Lipscomb, who founded the college and founded the Gospel Advocate in 1856. And he was an elderly man when I entered the old Nashville Bible School at David Lipscomb College. And I sat at his feet, and then H.C. O. Bowles went to school there, studied under David Lipscomb, and he thought so much of Lipscomb and his teaching, he spent 16 years there. In the last few years of that 16, he was teaching. And then he became a professor there, and then he became president of the school. And I studied under H.C. O. Bowles. I have a picture of you here. Yeah. He's a grandson of John Smith, one of the pioneer preachers of the Christian Church.
Reckon John Smith.
Reckon John Smith.
He's a determined look, isn't he?
Yeah. He has a church here. Yeah. All the way to Johnston.
Oh, uh-huh.
Brother was a preacher.
Oh.
He was an Army intelligence station in the East, Japan and China.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. He could speak a number of languages working in those countries, Secret Service.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a son, two sons, both went to Columbia Military Academy, and then the older boy went to
Well, now, do you want to talk a little bit about the history of the Mountain Church, even before you came, how it got started?
Well, you might read this brief history of the church, yeah.
Oh, okay.
You want to read that?
Probably not. I think he'd rather have you do it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, if you wouldn't mind.
The Mountain Christian Church has a long and illustrious history. One of the oldest churches of the 19th century Restoration Movement. It began operation in 1824. The church was organized when James McVeigh, a Kentucky pioneer preacher of the Christian Church, traveled by foot through the hills and mountains of Virginia and West Virginia into Maryland, reaching Harford County in August 1824. The old records show that Union Chapel, Wilner, and a home for public worship, free for all denominations of Christians, was the place that the seeds were sown for the establishment of the present Christian Church. It was in a revival conducted by James Henschel and G. Austin in July 1834. The Christians were inspired to seek their own house of worship, which was in a long log house near Franklinville. The congregation was known as the Jerusalem Christian Church. The old cornerstone, located inside the main entrance of the present building, are inscribed with this name. In September 1846, a decision was made to build a new house of worship. The minister, R.F. Ferguson, was authorized to select the location. An old minute book states, a tract of land containing about 4 acres on what is known as Mountain was deeded free to the Christian congregation by William and Ellen McComas, on which to build a house of worship. The present wooden building, located across the cemetery from the main building, was built in 1891 and rebuilt and rededicated in 1910. It is presently being used as a scout building, a fellowship hall, and overflow for Sunday school until the completion of the new educational building, early in 1973. The stone sanctuary and classroom building was erected in 1954 and 1955. During its history, the church has never closed its doors nor changed its basic conservative religious position. It is now one of the largest Christian churches in the East. For more than 25 years, Dr. and Mrs. William P. Walker, the present minister emeritus, led the congregation from a small rural circuit with four Christian church to its present sizable and dynamic outreach for Christ.
I didn't understand quite how Mountain got its name. Where's that from? I mean,
there was a post office up here by that name, Mountain. There's a little village up there, and right across from the present buildings. There was a little building there and a post office, and it was known as Mountain. And this was one of the highest points of this end of the county. When you start down here, you're going down until you get to the bay. I don't know what the elevation is, 750 more feet above the Chesapeake Bay. Mrs. Walker used to say she could stand out on the steps and see the cars cross the bridge.
You can, on a clear day, you can see the bridge.
Yeah, you can see the bridge.
But
she could see the cars.
When the little church, they just took that down, was that in 78? After the educational building was completed.
And they took it down?
They took it down. Was that 79?
I don't know. It's been a short time.
Just within the past year or so.
We used it for a great many years until it became dangerous. The sides were bulging out about 5 or 6 inches. And it was dangerous to let the building be used for scout purposes in case of a storm. No, it's been impossible ever since I've been here. Now we're talking in terms of a rest home for the aged. We have the land, we bought more land just recently, and we have some who say it's impossible. But if I can live long enough, we'll have one down there, a good one. And I think we have enough people in the church now that have the vision of a rest home who will help make it possible. And what we mean by rest home is where, when you get to the age of retirement and no place to go, or if you have a place to go and you would like to be in a home like that, if you can pay, you pay your way. If you cannot pay, pay as much as you can. And if you can't pay anything, the church will take you in. That's the kind of home we have in mind. And we have the land. We bought additional acreage. We have plenty of land for a new school building or two and for the rest of it. That's all bought and paid for. In the day school, I think we have 10 teachers now, isn't that right? 10 teachers. We have a waiting list for students.
Do you know what the membership is now?
No, it goes into the hundreds now. I wouldn't know. I don't keep up with that anymore. I used to tell you within 25 or 50 how many we had. But they've been coming in for the last few months and almost every Sunday.
as a minister, have you been asked to do a lot of sort of unusual kinds of tasks that you wouldn't think would be normally of a minister? I mean, I guess you've done quite a lot of weddings and funerals.
I've married people all over this part of the county and the state of Maryland, and out of Pennsylvania, and from Virginia, they come in here to get married. It's unbelievable how many couples have been married in that room over there. But I don't do any of that now. Right? Not since I retired, it wouldn't be Christian to do that with the minister of the Bible. I assist in the morning worship. That is the second worship service. I teach during the first one. I still teach and work with the minister during the second service, taking the prayer, the communion, benediction.
If you want to learn anything about the Bible, you come to the Sunday school.
Yeah. Well, I've had some tremendous teachers. Very few men living today in the Christian church, regardless of which brotherhood. We have three brotherhoods in the Christian church. That has had as fine a teacher as I have. I had David Lipscomb before he died. He was about 80 when I had him. He sat down and he couldn't read. He sat there and gave the lectures. I could sit within 4 or 5 feet of them. There's very few men living today that heard David Lipscomb. He founded that paper I picked up over there in 1856. Then he founded the college, the school. And then very few people are living today that had H. Leo Bowles. Not too many of us living. And I've been around a long time. I was born in 95. That would make me 85. I'm in my 86th year. And I think I'm just as active today as I was when I came here in 1846.
Do you have any idea how many you've baptized?
No, I haven't. How many additions? I know we've baptized lots of them, and there have been many, many additions. And when we think about the ministers, missionaries, the teachers, business people that have gone out of this church with our young people, like your daughter, she's a doctor, and there's Kenny Messman, the doctor.
She was the last one that you baptized before.
Yeah. But she's the first woman doctor I've ever sent out of a church. I've sent others out, but she's the first woman doctor, your daughter.
Has your church service changed? Say, when you first came here, was it a lot different than it is, now?
Oh, yes. Yes. It's quite a difference in it. We had two morning worship services in. We had to go to Fork first into a service, and then come back here. And it was quite different from what it is now. A different type of service, worship service. We've tried to do our worship services on a spiritual basis. We try to keep the entire service spiritual and scriptural. Yeah. We try in our preaching to have something to say it and quit. And not for long. When I have a clock on the pulpit, one on the lectern, I guess it's still there. When that clock gets around to a certain point, I was given the invitation. Well, sometimes that wouldn't happen when they would take up 10 to 15 minutes of my time in the beginning with unnecessary announcements. I'd just forget all about that and I'd take it off the other end. And when they said something about it, I said, make your announcement some other time. Print them in the bulletin, that's what it's for. And not stand up there as you do in a country church and read all the announcements. That's what they used to do. Stand up there for 10 or 15 minutes and read announcements and explain where so-and-so lived and how to get there and all stuff like that. Yeah, we've seen a lot of growth and development in the church as well as in the community.
They used to have the church suppers and things too, didn't they, at first?
Mm-hmm. Well, they couldn't have a minister, they thought, without suppers. I was going down Main Street in Bel Air one day, and a businessman came to me and said, your name is Walker. And I said, yes. He said, well, I'm coming down next Friday night, and I believe it is Friday night, and help you out some. The ladies are having a supper, and I bought a ticket. I said, well, you better come pretty soon, because I'm going to put a stop to that monkey business. But my women are not going to save any dinners to make money. He said, well, how are you going to run the church? I said, the Lord will run the church. We're going to stop that supper business, and we did. They didn't think they could pay expenses. Then we started the budget system, the seven departments of church work. We began to organize a church like we had been used to in downtown central churches, where a church almost runs itself with its organizations. I think we had seven or eight departments of service in the church. And when we got them organized and staffed, coordinated, it made the building of the congregation easier. Now, when we wanted money to build this house, the first unit up there, as I said a few moments ago, I went to St. Louis and Indianapolis in my own church and board. The church extension refused to let me have any money. I said, Brother Walker, we couldn't let you have that kind of money because you never pay it back. You have a country church and always will be a country church. So I turned around and walked out. Came back and bought it in Bel Air. And we never missed a note in the seven-year mortgage. In the day school, we had the same problem. Let the state have the school system. Well, I heard that. We kept working on the church school, day school, until we got to the place where we were ready to start it. And now we have 10 of the finest teachers. We have a waiting list. Get in.
Did you ever have some cooperative ventures with other churches in Harford County?
Well, I've worked with them. I have been president of the Ministerial Association in Baltimore once or twice. And that took in hundreds of churches, not only our churches. And then we used to have a Harford County Ministerial Union. I work with that. I've always worked with the denominational churches of all descriptions.
Can you say that they've changed a lot since when you came here? Or do you have any thoughts about the different churches and any specific kinds of things?
You mean the denominational churches?
Yeah.
Well, they're about the same. Theology and their concept of service, they haven't changed much. But you look back over the years that we have been here, a great deal of the success of this work should be given to Mrs. Walker, because she knew how to work with the women. She had worked with the women in other churches like Kalamazoo. She knew how to work with women. She'd been president of the women's group in Kalamazoo, and they had 6,000 women in their group. And she was president of it 2 years. And when we came here, we had this little white building up here, 300 members, I guess. And she began working with the women, and finally we got the Women's Fellowship instead of the old ladies' aid they used to have. We organized a Christian Women's Fellowship. And then we eliminated the money-raising features of it to raise money, get out and have suppers and sell things and extract and what have you, raise money. We decided to use the tithing system. And that was a new adventure, tithing. And we got numbers of people to use the tithing system. And we eliminated the sales of all kinds to raise money. And the first month we were here, we stood on a corner in Bel Air. And our women from this church were up there near the old Masonic temple. They had a place out there where they were selling clothes and things like that. And we were standing across the street back where one of those banks is in there. And I looked at Mrs. Walker and I said, look, there's some of the women from our church. I said, we'll have to stop that. We're not going to have that. It took us several months, but we did. We discontinued women having sales and doing that type of work to raise money. Now have your monthly meetings and have worship and that type of thing, study, and fellowship, but you're not meeting to raise money. Let the church do that. Well, we've always done this, and we can't run a church without it. I said, forget it. We're going to turn it over to the Lord now. And we've been running it. He has. I notice the budget now is $226,000 when they had a hard time raising $5,000 or $6,000. And Fork has done just about as well, considering the congregation they had on it. Somebody asked me why I took this church rather than the Ford. Well, when I walked in over there the first Sunday, I had that service first. There were three or four men sitting out on the front steps, and they were in a discussion about having so much more money to pay than they'd been paying in the past. Said the Mountain Church is asking too much money of Ford. And I turned around and I said, are you dissatisfied? I said, well, we don't think we should pay so much. I said, brother, I don't have to preach in this church. And we don't have to depend on your money. If you don't like the arrangement, say so. And I'll turn around and go back to the Mountain Church and we won't ask you for anything. And I'll tell you one thing, I'm not going to be preaching over here too long, because I'm going to get you a full-time man. And the eyes got big and they didn't believe it. 19 months they had Bob Green. He stayed with them 8 years. And they didn't believe it could be done. But they've done a good work over there.
And so you have Boulevard now, too.
Boulevard, yeah, we have Boulevard and Joppatown and Havana Grass. We've been branching out. I didn't want to branch out too fast, like we have done in Nashville. So we have more than 100 congregations in and around Nashville.
Just Christian congregations?
Yeah, oh yes. And if I had another 25 years to live here, we'd have churches all over Baltimore. Because we have a message that the religious world wants to hear. It's a message of love and peace and goodwill and unity. And when you can bring that to a people, you don't have any problems. We've gone a long way in the county. The church over at Habergrass, we have 1 year, one down in Boulevard and down to Joppatown. We're just getting to the place now where we can do that type of work. And then we have a good program with the young people now. We have an educational program. We have a day school program. We have something to challenge the church. You have to give a church something to do, a vision of where you want to go. I have them working on that building down there. We just bought the land for it. But they're beginning to have committee meetings. And one of these days, you'll see a beautiful building go up there, a rest home for the aged. And then you'll see another school building go up down there, day school. It hasn't been discouraging. I thought I'd stay here until I did two years work out at Hopkins and go back to Vanderbilt. I'd been invited to teach at Vanderbilt before I left there to teach recent American history. And I told the committee my business wasn't teaching history in the university. My business was preaching in the ministry and using history to help me in my ministry. That's why I studied history. So I declined the offers to teach. I did teach 2 years at this little college, but I did that to help them. I wish I might have been able to continue, but the work here was too pressing. It was too much to be looking after in the way of day schools and that type of program.
Is there anything else that we've not asked you that you'd like to talk about, or anything else?
Well, looking back over the work that we have done, the 34 years we've been here, the decision I made to stay here, I have no regrets. I don't think I came here. I think the Lord sent me here. Mrs. Walker stood out there and almost cried when she looked at that little building and said, "I can't understand why you're coming out here." I said, "I don't understand myself. I think I want to go to Hopkins." And she said, "You're just completely out of your mind to leave Kalamazoo and come out here with this bunch of farmers." And she was born real on farm. You know, she thought everybody out here were farmers, but we didn't have half a dozen farmers in the church. We didn't have that many people that owned farms. We had a few. But she stood by the work. She knew how to work with the women. And then we got the church tied into the Baltimore complex of churches. And she got interested in the Baltimore work and interested in the state work. And she became president of the state work for a year or two. And it's unbelievable that you could take a church out here in the country with this rural background justice $7,000 and bring it up to a budget of $226,000. That's what it is this year. I think I'm right about that. So it's somewhere $226,000.
You must be offering something good.
Yeah. And then the young people that have gone out of this church into the professions and into business and into the work of the church is unbelievable. They sent two doctors out of this church, your daughter and Kenny, medical doctors. And I don't know how many teachers have gone out. We have a teacher in Fullerton, California from here. We have one or two in Florida somewhere. I can't keep up with them.
I guess the basic concept of the Christian religion, how would you word that?
Well, we have unity. Yeah. That's one of our greatest pleas, is unity within the church. And what we should like to do is to bring the church together with Catholic and Protestants. So you have the Roman Catholic, the Greek Catholic, the Anglican Catholic, and then you have the Protestant church with 200 or more groups. And we would like to see the church united, the Catholic and the Protestant, and just to have the one great church. Have your differences, have your opinions, yes, but fellowship one. And in our services, most every Sunday, presiding at the Lord's table, we tell the audience the Lord's table is for Lord's people. You might be a Catholic or Protestant, but this is the Yeah, where the Bible speaks, we speak, and where the Bible is silent, we are silent. And many times people go out the door and say, I took communion today, but I'm not a member of your church. They say, your church. But you said all Christians are invited. I said, this is the Lord's table for the Lord's people. And you might be a Catholic or Protestant, we're asking no questions. You come. Yes, yeah, we do. Every Sunday we have people going to the communion table, not members of the gym. We have built the congregation as near a scriptural basis foundation as humanly possible. We ask nobody to subscribe to any kind of creeds, the Apostles' Creed or any other kind of creed. They ask you if you believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God and the personal Savior. If you believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, your personal Savior, you believe his teaching, the teaching of the apostles. That's all we can ask you. And that's why this church is growing. I don't know how many hundreds of members we have now. Certainly not the church we found when we came here in 1946. Not hateful, as I'm talking about. Forgive me. Not the same attendance, not quite as many. Not the same thing over there.
Now they had so many that they had to divvy it up into two services.
When I planned this building up here in the sanctuary, rather than have a large building half filled most of the time, we planned the building to seat 356, and we planned for three morning worship services rather than have one big, what they call auditorium. I don't like to use the word sanctuary. And for 356 seats, and then have three services. So we're having two services now, and we could well add another one. it's a different program. It's a program that's built on the program that I used in my downtown churches, and the same program I used at Kalamazoo, in the 7 departments. That type of program, it reaches out into all areas of the church life. We've been doing the impossible. They're still thinking it's impossible to go on with this day school. Well, we have the day school. It's a reality. We're not dreaming about it. We've gone through most of the grades now. Home for the aged. That would be a reality too. It's just a matter of time. They have committees working on that. One of these days we'll have a beautiful restaurant. You're able to pay, you can pay all of your way, and you can pay all of it. If you're not, we'll take you in. There's one right up there that we built in Johnson City. They said that one couldn't be built.
Is that the one Donald Park?
No, Donald Park is north. This is Johnson City. That's one of the things. So just like this guy. There's another section. We get something else. That school of religion. It's a moving college. Of course, you said that couldn't be done. But we did it. Most of that money came from the Phillips family. I never worry about the money. I think it's the Lord's will and the Lord's work, and we're moving in the right direction. I don't worry about the consequences. We've borrowed money to put up that sanctuary. I've had a mortgage for 7 years. I paid it. I don't know how much we borrowed on this other building. But that too would be paid. And these other buildings would be going up down the road. Which means that. One of these days.
So if you had to do over, you'd follow the same footsteps?
I'd do the same thing. I decided to stay here after 2-3 years to see what would happen. I had cooperation. I had some splendid men, John Pitcock, and Robert Magnus, Charles Richardson, and some others in this man. Albert Magnus had a little business out on Emerton Road. Working one or two men. And I talked to Albert. I knew Albert had business ability, and I knew he knew how to make money. And I got him interested in giving. I said, you just give the Lord so much the money you make in this business, and he'll take care of your business. And he started giving. And now he not only has that plan over there, he's dead now, but he has 500 or 600. We walked along together. And John Pitcock was another good businessman in Halifax. And Charles Richardson was another one. We had several men. I had one businessman in Baltimore. We talked about putting this building up and having to borrow some money. He wouldn't sign the note. I'm not going to put my name on that note. Said, I'll have it to pay you a part of it. I said, we don't want your name on there, then. We just keep it on. One of these days, you'll wish you'd have put it on there. I said, it'll be paid for it. And we never missed him almost 7 years. And he always regretted he didn't sign it. You know, I don't think he's living there. He looked up in the front there, they wanted to put that rose under. They wanted that wood up there. And I said, I don't want any wood in this building. And we want stone building. And put wood up there in that beautiful rose under. And he said, what did it cost? And I said, I don't know what it would cost. I'm not worried about that. And I got to ask him about it. I asked the architect what that thing would cost. He said around $3,000 at that time. And I thought they'd die. One man wasn't a member of the church. He said, I'll take care of it. And I laid about that, and he paid the $3,000 or whatever it was. I don't know. But I often look at it day and night, inside and outside, and it's beautiful. The colors in that window. You just have to look at it to appreciate its beauty.
Were the stone cut and all, or did they cut some?
They cut most of them here. Now, when we went to Palaire and consulted an architect, he refused to have anything to do with it. He said, it's a country church and go build your brick and forget it. Then my own church architect in Indianapolis told me the same thing. Somebody told me about some architects in York, Pennsylvania. John Pitcock and Richardson and Albert Magnus, one or two more. We went up there and talked to those two people. They said, yes, we're commercial architects, but we would like to get in church buildings. And if you would use us, we'll send one of our men to Switzerland and let him study church architecture. And that's what they did. They sent Dick Martin to Switzerland or somewhere over there. And he learned something about building churches. And I gave him an idea of what I wanted here. I wanted a Gothic building because I think they are beautiful. They just lift you up and up the Gothic. And I wanted the tower. They said we could leave that off. And then I wanted a spire with a cross on it. They said we could leave that off. I said, we're not leaving anything on. We're going to put the tower on and the spire and the cross. And that's what we're doing. It's up there. And all of it was paid for in 7 years. And the congregation is not going in any further than the minister or the leadership. And the man that's in this business, in the minister's business, it is for me. I knew something about the business world before I got into the ministry. It is a business. And you need to know something about the ability of the church and just how far it can go, or how far it should go, financially and otherwise. And we've tried to stay within the ability of the congregation. We've never put a church in debt to the depth that it couldn't get out of it. And we've only had four churches in all of my life. And two of them were student churches. In other words, I'd gone to university or college when I had them. I've had Kalamazoo and Bel Air, the only two full-time churches I've had in my life. I've had churches ever since I was 16 years old. I did enough full-time like this. It's a miracle, the way this work has developed, and the strength of the church. The strength of it in a spiritual way, yes. It's a much stronger spiritual church than many people think. The manhood and womanhood within that church, the leadership within the church, and the youth coming out, the day school program, it's developing momentum. It will take it far into the future, but we can be building momentum as we go along, and that's what we're doing. We try to add the various features of which we have been dreaming ever since we've been here. Like the day school, we got that started. But I didn't think that would be possible. Now we're dreaming about the rest home. We have the land. We have to give a congregation something to dream about, something to think about, something to work for, so long as you don't get them too deeply in debt. And then you get a congregation discouraged and it falls apart. The members begin to leave or they stop coming. We've had only a few members to leave this church since I've been here. I've had a few, yes, because they didn't agree with my financial program. They thought it was too businesslike. But I knew where we wanted to go, and we couldn't go that direction and that length on parsippers and bazaars and selling rags on street corners in Bel Air. That was my concept of running the church. So out the window all of that went in about 2 years, 3 years. And some thought we were building a house that wasn't needed. A little brick building would have been all right. See, we had to go on that hill and take off the trees. We had to take about 15 or more feet off of that and make a parking lot out of it. That was all downhill, like we were just going to build. They didn't see how you were going to put a church over there. Well, I had talked to some contractors. I had one man to tell me to give me 6 weeks or 2 months, and I'll take all of that hill off and make a parking lot out of it. And where that new cemetery is, that was 4 feet higher than the old cemetery. I took all of that and pushed it down to the parking lot. You'd have to have pictures of it to know how it looked. But if I had it to do over, I'd do the same thing. I've been making the changes. I might travel a little faster. And I, Mrs. Walker and I have always been interested in young people. She had been a school teacher, and she cared my youth program. I'd rather have her than have any paid man you could put in there as a director of youth. Time came when we had to have a director of youth here. Work up too much for Dawn. But she understood young people, she loved young people, and she's traveled all over the country with them to conventions and conferences. St. Louis, Chicago, Indianapolis. She'd go with them. And sometimes she'd have to pull them around. Push him through. But she knew how to work with young people and get along with them, love them. That's been one of our foundations of growth and development, taking care of youth. Now, I'm not thinking altogether about teenagers, But I'm thinking about the people in the 20s and in the 30s. Get them before they get in the 40s and the 50s and the 60s. Get them while they're able to make a contribution to the church. Get people in the 50s and 60s and 70s, yes. But be sure to go after these others because they have years of service ahead of them. And then we like to take our young people and work with them and find out their abilities, their talents, if they could teach, or they could be a doctor, a lawyer, a businessman. We like to work with them and encourage them to do something of which you're capable of doing. Well, I wouldn't make any changes. I do just about the same program that we have done. I had one lady when I first came here. She said, remember the Christian church in Oklahoma where we were strong. She said, I wouldn't want to go out and have a country church. And I have a good church here in Bel Air, and a nice, beautiful building. But I want to go out there, that little country church for me. I said, lady, I'm going to make you take care of one of those birds back one of these days. You'll be proud to come to this church. She said, oh, said, you'll never have the church that we have. I won't tell you the church. And there's no comparison where she was going and what we had with you. The Lord has been with us, that's all. It couldn't have been done. It's impossible. You just can't go out in a country like this on a hillside with trees on it and a cemetery and put up a building like we have, and buildings and a future and a school and what have you, without the Lord being with us. And we haven't put a burden upon the church. We've given them something to do. And we've never missed a note with anybody. We've always met our note promptly. Now we're having the two morning worship services and can't go to a third one. The building was designed for three services.
Well, it's rather active. It's practically every night there's something.
We've long since left the Sunday program of the church. It's more or less 7 days a week now. There's something going on. See, you have a minister, associate minister, you have a director of youth, things like that. That's what we had to do. We put a building up, a good building. The school building is well built. It was dedicated in 56, rather, to contract on in 54. But we haven't spent any money on it yet. And you won't have to spend any money if you keep the roof taken care of because that's concrete asbestos roof on it. Now the education building we put on it a little bit later is not as good in the architecture and stonework as the sanctuary. You can see the difference in the two buildings. Now, Greeks did one and Italians did the other. And you can see the difference in the masonry of the sanctuary and the masonry of the educational building. If you don't believe it, you get out and look at the way the stones are put in there. I sat out there one day when they were putting up the sanctuary and the wall facing the cemetery. They were about 4 or 5 feet up. And the old Greek was standing there watching. His grandson was over there working on the wall. And he got a stone the wrong way or something. He went over and made him take it out. And the boy put it down, worked on it a little bit, put it back. He went back the second time. He said, now that's my grandson. He said, I had to spend 5 years nuttiness, and he lost a nut in 5 months. He went back and made a ticket a second time, took it over to the cutting stone and showed him where to trim. He took that stone out there 3 times before he let him cut it in. He says, if he's going to be a stonemason, he's going to have to learn to do it right. Now, if you want to see the difference in stonemasonry, look at the sanctuary and go over and look at the educational building. Greeks did one and the Italians did the other. But that, those old Greeks, they knew what they were doing. They'd done that work in Greece. And they didn't have stone buildings. We have a building that lasts a long, long time. You could just keep the roof on it. That's all you have to do. We can put on another service. We have two, three. And then if you kind of think of expansion programs, you don't want to do too much expansion until you get this one strong enough that it can handle the total situation. You don't go over here in Bel Air and other places in Baltimore starting congregations until you get your mother church strong enough to take care of the churches that we're bringing into existence, financially and otherwise. Because I've seen 100 or more of them grow up in Nashville, and I don't know how they do. Nashville has a population of, well, I guess, 200,000 now. But back then, it ran around 96,000, 100,000. And we have churches there, but there's 6 or 8 blocks in there that don't think anything about it. And there's no competition at all. They're all working. To think about Baltimore, we don't have 5-6 churches in Baltimore. We already have 100, 125 in that whole area. Yeah. Yeah. It's moving out west and moving toward Orford County. That's what we've been waiting for. We've been waiting for Baltimore to get out of here with our church ready.
You got plenty of room up there
anyhow? Yeah. Yeah, they thought we were building too much parking lot. They thought about a half of it. That would be plenty. You go up there Sunday morning and run around trying to find a parking space. I don't know where we're going to put the cars. They wanted more land for cemeteries. Well, I'm not thinking about the cemetery. So we can go here across the road and buy some land over there for a cemetery. We don't have to have it around here. Why take this precious land and make a cemetery out of it? Build one over there and bought 5 acres of all the land that we should have bought 20 years ago. Bill Bullis bought that land over there. Now what he'll do, he'll turn around and let the church have it later. He better. It's over back where the colored people live. I wanted to start buying those houses over there one at a time, you know. And then by that 5 or 10 acres of what it is back there. Then we have bought land, 8 or 10 acres just recently down below us. It takes land to carry a program that we have in mind. Day school, and home for the aged, and your church program. You're thinking in several areas of living.
Isn't that property back behind that for sale?
Where? I don't know. They bought some land there recently, 10 or more acres in there. They went away down in that field and came back down this way. And they left room for a street to come out of there, coming up here near where traffic engine is. There's a street coming through there, coming out of there. Now, if you have any questions, let me have them.
You've answered pretty much everything that we had.
I'm just rambling around here.
May I take your picture?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You'd have 30 days to convert. Okay, but it would not be at that rate. Mm-hmm. All right.
So yes. It would cover just while you're working, I mean, what, after you retire.
It would not cover you after you
retire. It's only if you drop dead at work, right?
Yes. Drop dead anywhere, as long as you're employed by the library.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
You could even go okay.
To the mall. Be
at the lunch hour. Okay. All right. So that's what we're thinking of there. That is a little bit better than the school district's policy, much better than the county's policy, and at least as good, maybe better than our community college's policy. For once, we will be on a parity with everybody else. Okay, here we go. To Jim Gozier from Gene Arment, subject, request for equipment for Havre de Grace for fiscal 79-80, date November 13, 1978. Number one, restroom exhaust fan. All odors from the restroom are circulated throughout the library, especially to the nonfiction area. These are sometimes overwhelming. People wonder if they're in the sewage plant or at the library. It gets better. Yeah, anyway. Two,